Is this on already?
Yeah.
Okay, everything going? Fine. Oh, I see, you did that. I would have had my makeup done if I'd known if I was on screen. So, Rabbi Sai, first of all, to clarify the question that we raised yesterday, Anthony, you weren't here, but we're talking about Tu Bishvat, and Tu Bishvat being the tax date, the cut-off date for the Maaser that you have to give last year on last year's produce, and the Maaser that you have to give this year on this year's produce. Hayotzei HaSoda, Aser to Aser, Hayotzei HaSoda, Shono, Shono. So Gemara learns out, Sifri learns out, that you can only take Maaser on last year's produce from last year's produce, and Maaser on next year's produce from next year's. Therefore you need a cut date, a cut-off date. Chazal v'koveya, Beshamai v'koveya Rosh Chodesh Shvat. And so the question that I asked you yesterday was, which a question I didn't have an answer to, was that the stage in which the peri has to reach is one third, chanota. If it's one third grown before Tu Bishvat, it belongs to last year's. If it's one third grown only after Tu Bishvat, then it belongs to next year's. Does that mean that every farmer is going to go around every tree and and estimate every fruit as to whether or not it's reached a third of its potential growth, and then he's going to label every one? You could have people who've got orchards with thousands of fruits. Yeah, it's impractical. So I asked a couple of rabbonim yesterday, one who came to the L'chaim and another one who didn't come to L'chaim. But I asked them, so I heard, I got two answers. Number one was that Enochanama, it's not practical, and it didn't happen that that the farmer had to label every single fruit in order to decide if it belongs to last year's produce or this year's produce. He said that in the same way that, if you all remember, when we had Shemitah, we had dates that the Rabbonim fixed, or Chazal fixed. There were certain dates by which we said, until this date you can eat dates from last year. And from this date onwards, all the dates are considered Shemitah. And then it said the same thing applied to grapes, and the same thing applied to other ones. Chazal fixed dates. I mean, I'm not talking about dates the fruit, but dates the actual tarikh, yeah, the day of the year. Right, they fixed times when they said, this is the end of the last year's produce. So he said that probably in the time of Chazal, they did exactly the same thing. They announced that there was a date called Chanota, when Chanota had actually happened, when the Peres had reached a third. And those Peres would all belong to last year's Tavur, and everything after that would belong to next year's Tavur. That's one answer I got. The other answer I got was that, you know, we're going by Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva brought down in the Nite Gavriel. That he says that Tu Bishvat is Tu Bishvat all the year, all the world around. Yeah, it's Tu Bishvat. It's called Tu Bishvat in Australia and in Argentina and in other places where it's the middle of the summer and things are growing. Yeah, Masha Enkein. Yeah, but we still keep Tu Bishvat. Why? Because it goes according to the growth in Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about, that's why we made such a fuss about the Peres of Eretz Yisrael on Tu Bishvat, was because the Tu Bishvat and the Chiyuv of Masrus, the Chiyuv of Trumas of Masrus, and therefore the cut-off date for those taxes, if you like, is Tu Bishvat in Eretz Yisrael. That's knowing across the entire world. She said, in Eretz Yisrael, nothing grows in the summer, in the middle of the winter anyway. It's not really a problem to say that the Peres have grown up to a certain level by Tu Bishvat, and they've grown a certain level. And in fact, we know from the Birchas Hoilonos that we say in Nisan, they were waiting until the Peres first start to produce their first flowers, you know, the prochim, or the first signs of the fruit, before we can make the brocha. So we know that nothing really starts growing anyway till Nisan. Therefore, this entire discussion is academic. Chazal said that because the straf is oiler be'elonois and rove of the geshomim of the winter have already occurred and the trees are rejuvenated, the Tu Bishvat is the cut-off date. But in practical terms, there was nothing growing before, nothing growing afterwards. The trees didn't produce. We were wondering what would happen with an estrog tree. Because we say with an estrog tree, that creates hodor, hador be'ilo mishono lashono, that the estrog grows all the year round. Also, it might be in Australia, in Argentina, where there aren't maestros, but there is orlo. Yeah, so it might be that would be the cut-off date for orlo. Year one, year two, year three will always be Tu Bishvat before a tree that was planted beforehand. First year orlo will be up to Tu Bishvat, and then Tu Bishvat to Tu Bishvat is year two. But in general terms, it's not a practical shaila. It's just a date that Chazal were koveya, that Tu Bishvat, because last year's geshomim have already arrived and the tree is rejuvenated, therefore that will be your cut-off point for Maisa. But in practical terms, it isn't a problem because nothing's growing around that time of the year.
Started at Turaway, Northwest London, Friday, Hey Shavat, 23rd of January. Marina Rav, Rav Gedalia Lieberman Shlita, a story by a Shalom Zocher. This week's Torah is sponsored, Lichvat Simos of Mitzvah of Meshulam, David Hakaroch Nereyor, the Mitzvah was last Shabbos, Yerotz and Shizka Rav, Yerotz and Rav Nachas, Menem Kol Yosei Chalat Sehem, but in the Shema, our esteemed founder, Rav Yosef Dov, Ben, Rav Shema Michal Tzvi, Itzkevitz, Zichro Ono Livrocho.
Good morning. Good to be here again. The Indian I'm going to share is a halachic Indian related to Birch Sarenin, and it's not my first time doing that. Apologize if it's too much of the same, but I think I'll assure him in between. And I know it's Friday, but like a little connection to the parasha. So in the Indian I'll share, there'll be one Araya, which is directly from Halachas coming out from our from Parashas Poi. And if I have a little bit of time, 2 or 3 minutes at the end, I'll also share something parasha related. Begin with a story that I didn't witness firsthand. Actually, read it in a Torah journal, so I'm taking it from there as a springboard to discuss a set of halachas. There was a fellow sitting by a Shalom Zocher, and next to him was sitting a Choshev Talmud Chochem. He was eating by Shalom Zocher. We have arbus, yeah, chickpeas, right? That's the minig. So he was eating chickpeas. And this fellow decided he also wants some chickpeas, so he stuck out his hand to the plate of chickpeas, and the person who was eating the chickpeas, who I say was a distinguished person, said, he made it his hand, they're for me. And he kept eating, this distinguished person, rabbi, kept eating the chickpeas until he finished the whole plate, without letting him even take any. And it obviously felt very strange. And as soon as he finished, he turned to him and he said, I'm sorry, I wouldn't usually do that. But I picked up one chickpea, I made a brocha, ha'adomo, with the intention to eat a couple more. And then it fell out of my hand, right onto the plate. And there's a birchas hanen in Shiloh over here. There was a problem that could be that it's a brocha levatola. Because... Oh, so you're asking why? So very good. That's what I'll explain the background, what his thoughts were. It could be it's a brocha v'tola. And I decided the way to get out of the brocha is to eat all the chickpeas, and then I'm covered with my brocha. So, okay, that's the story that I read. I don't know if it actually happened or it was just written as a springboard to share. I see people asking, well, what's the problem? What's the brocha v'tola? What's happening over here? So it's an inyan that discussed in Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Vav. And the source is a Yerushalmi. It's a Yerushalmi which is brought lahalacha both in the Rambam and in the Rosh. And I'll begin with I'll share it how the Rosh shares the Yerushalmi. The Rosh says the following Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, Zerika Omar Zera boy. Zerika shares that Zera had a shaila. The shaila was a he the notal turmus biodoi. If somebody takes a turmus, which is some sort of should have maybe checked before the shiur what the translation of Tormus is. It's brought in a lot of halachas. It's brought in Hezboira, it's brought in other places. Some sort of bean or something. Not tiras, no. It says in Hezboira you have to cook it 7 times. I don't know exactly what it is. And then the bitter part becomes sweet and the sweet part becomes bitter. I should have checked what it is. But either way, you take this Tormus in your hand, or the same with you, the chickpea. And it fell out of your hand. Maul of Aruch Zimun Tinyonos. Should you make a second bracha? You took it in your right hand to make a brocha, as the halacha is, and then it fell down, and let's say it got lost. You don't have it anymore. And then you want to eat the rest of the turmus that you were planning to eat anyway. So do you make a second brocha? That's the question. The Rishalmi says, well, why should you make a second brocha? Why would this be different? Why would this be different if you're standing by a stream of water? Huh? You want to eat the rest, and do you make a second bracha? The Rishalmi doesn't answer the question. But then goes on to say, why would this be different than a stream of water? You're standing by the stream of water, you make a shahakel, and the water that you just made, that was in front of you by the bracha, continued to move, and then you drink a cup of the next water, and then you don't make another bracha. So the Rishalmi says, it's different. There, that was your plan, by the water, that was your plan. You were planning to drink the water that's going to come in a moment, because it's constantly flowing. Over here, you're planning to eat the tormus in your hand, and it fell down. It's not according to your plan, so maybe you have to make a separate bracha. I'm going to simply go through the Yerushalmi now, the stages, and then afterwards I'll explain it. So if there's details that are sort of missing a little bit of explanation, even in the Rosh, when he presents the Yerushalmi, he first presents the words of the Yerushalmi, and then he says Pirush, then he explains the Yerushalmi. The language of the Yerushalmi is always very difficult to get clarity, even more so than the Bavli, which, you know, once you get used to the style, it's easier, and the Yerushalmi is less so. It almost doesn't have a style in that way. The Yerushalmi then goes on to say that Rabbi Chiya said that when you make a bracha on bread, you shouldn't first cut the bread. So relevant tonight, challah. You don't first cut the challah. I mean, also we have a lech mishnah, but even in the weekday, if you have a whole loaf of bread, well, you don't first cut the bread and then make a bracha. Rather, you first make a bracha and then cut the bread. Just by the way, this is incidentally, this is also halacha in the Bavli, halacha in Shulchan Aruch. And it's I think it's something that people often make a mistake, so I'll just highlight it. It's true about bread, it's true about a piece of cake, it's true about anything. If you have a Danish, so naturally, there used to sometimes be Danishes here by the shear, I don't know if there still is. Naturally, people who aren't familiar, that you break off a piece and you make a mezainis. And that's definitely wrong, la halacha. There's a din that you have to make a bracha on a sholem, on a complete thing, if it comes to you as a sholem. If a bread, or a Danish, or a cake, or whatever it is, comes to you as a sholem, or even if it doesn't, if it comes to you big, you shouldn't make it small and then make the bracha. Rather, you should make the bracha on it when it's bigger or when it's complete. So the correct way would be to make a bracha on the Danish, mezainis, and then afterwards break off a piece. Now, the Yerushalmi says the same din, that you shouldn't cut the bread first and then make a bracha, rather first make a bracha and then cut the bread. But it says it for a different reason, similar to the tormus. It says this, if you cut, the pshat in the Yerushalmi is this, if you cut the bread first and you make a bracha, so you made a bracha on your piece of bread. So then if it falls down, you're going to have to make another bracha on the next piece of bread. All the same principle, the Yerushalmi is saying. When you make a bracha on something, the bracha's on that. If that falls down, your bracha flies away. You have to make another bracha. So the Yerushalmi says that's the reason to first make a bracha on the loaf, then the bracha's on all of it. And then you cut a piece, if the piece falls down, the bracha will be on the next piece. You won't have to make another bracha. The Yerushalmi then goes and says that from all of these dinner we can learn that you're not allowed to make a bracha on food before it comes to you, before it's in front of you. So if you make
That's only if you cut it completely all the way through and separate it into two pieces.
Yeah. I'm not able to go, in other words, if I discuss in Petit Sapas, there are detailed halachas exactly how to cut and how much to cut, as some are familiar. Correct, but I'm just saying it in general terms, you can't cut it off totally before, rather you should make sure that at least it's attached. Yeah.
The bread is slapped, now you eat
Mubai. Now we buy sliced bread, yeah. So the halacha is the same, even a slice of bread, you shouldn't break off a slice, rather you should make them a whole slice. You shouldn't break off a piece first and then make a bracha, as people often naturally do, because rather you make it on the whole slice, because there's also a din of godel, like there's a din of sholem, there's a din of godel, it should be big. So comes the Rosh and then goes and explains the Yerushalmi, and I'll begin with that. The Rosh says that the din of the Yerushalmi, the pshat of the Yerushalmi is that when you make a bracha on something, it's relevant to a number of halachas in Brichos and Enin. We imagine it. I don't know. You make a bracha. You pick up. Let's say the story that I began with by the Shalom Zacha. You pick up a chickpea, and for the sake of those that came in later, I'll just very briefly share the story that we're trying to work out. There was a fellow by Shalom Zohar who made a bracha on a chickpea, as they have an Arabus one, and then it fell back into the plate. And he decided that he has to eat the whole plate in order that it shouldn't be a bracha vatola. That was the story. So we're trying to work out whether that's correct or not. So the ideas are this. When you pick something up in your hand to make a bracha, it's not that the bracha is on everything you're going to eat. We know the bracha covers everything you're going to eat. But the way it works in halacha is the bracha is chal on the thing you're holding. That's the chalois bracha. It's almost like a lomdus shasugya. It's not like you thank Hashem. There's the chalois bracha. The bracha takes effect on the item you're holding. And then everything else is nigrar. It's like tofel. It's like pulled after the thing you made the bracha. In other words, because I made a bracha on this chickpea, so therefore all the other things become like included in this chickpea.
Even if you had it in mind,
you're going to eat it. Yeah.
Everything
yes. Yeah. Even if you had in mind, I'll discuss it more specifically because we'll see. There's a second opinion. Even if you had in mind, you're going to eating the rest of the chickpeas. Let's say. Nevertheless, the way the bracha works is the bracha's chal on. This is according to everybody. The bracha's chal on what you're holding in your hand, and the other things become included in that. That's why, for example, there's a din.
You take a cheek bean, it's rotten, he will change it to another one.
If you did that after the bracha, it would be the same problem. Same problem, yeah. So that's how the Rishami begins. But the Rishami doesn't clearly answer the question. It says as a buyer, and the Rishami is not answered clearly, except the Rishami says that that's the reason why we cut the bread after making the bracha. Comes the Rosh and says, even though the din of cutting bread, the Bavli has another reason. The reason we cut the bread after the bracha, like I just pointed out, isn't because of a problem, it may fall down. We don't have such a chash. Rather, the reason we cut the bread after the bracha is because we want to make a bracha on a complete, on a shalim. Nevertheless, says the Rosh, we can still learn from the Yerushalmi the other dinim. The principle that when you make a bracha on one thing, the bracha's on that. And if that gets lost, you've lost your bracha, and you have to make another bracha. Ah, the Yerushalmi also says, and then you should say, Baruch Shem, Kved Machusel El Boed, on the first bracha, and that's the source for the concept of Baruch Shem. It's interesting, the Rosh looks like the Baruch Shem doesn't quite solve the problem. It just minimizes the problem. The language of the Rambam is more that if you said Baruch Shem, you've even solved the problem. Which is, the Rosh also is the one to be Mechadosh in this sugya, that's why he's Mechadosh, that if you just said Baruch Hashem, the Rosh says, I think there's a solution. If you've just said the words Baruch Hashem, instead of finishing the Brocha, if it's already fallen out of your hand after Baruch Hashem, instead of finishing the Brocha, you could say Lamdeini Chukecha, which is the Pasuk in Tehillim, and then it looks like you're reading Torah, and therefore it's not a bracha levatola. So, that's the Rosh over here. And like I say, the Rosh paskens like that, you would make another bracha, and so does the Rambam, and so does the Tor. And comes the Beis Yosef and says that there is a Hagos Maimonius that brings Rabbeinu Tam, that says if you make a bracha on a cup of wine, and the wine spills out, make a bracha, and then it suddenly spills. It's happened to me before the morning. Make a bracha on a coffee and drop the coffee. That's why that happened, because I hadn't had my coffee. So you drop the coffee. And then, the Rosh says, so Rabbeinu Tam says that take another cup of coffee, or in his case, another cup of wine, and drink it with the same first bracha. What's the problem? So, Mali, who cares the first cup? Who cares the second cup? Yeah? So that seems to be a contradiction. And so the Beis Yosef says, again, this Rabbeinu Tam has brought the Gos Maimonius and the Kolboy and others. And the Beis Yosef says that yes, Rabbeinu Tam seems to argue with the Rosh and the Rambam. And he holds when you make a bracha on one thing, if you're planning to drink more, it's only if you plan to drink more, like you said, then the bracha goes on what you, the main bracha goes on what you made the bracha. But since the other things are also covered, so therefore you can drink them as well. So that's okay. Yeah? So Beis Yosef presents its machloikas over here. On the one hand, you have the Rosh and the Rambam, who paskin. Either Rishalmi said differently. So he says Rishalmi had a shayla. The Rishalmi said, boy. The Rishalmi said, what's the din? It didn't really say, the din is you make another bracha. He said, what's the din if you pick up a chickpea and it falls out your hand? Do you make another bracha? So whereas the Rambam and the Rosh understand that the maskana of the Rishalmi is the Chumrah, which the word of the Rishalmi implies more that way, the Rabbeinu Tam will say some brachas ha'akel, and the Rishalmi didn't answer the question, and therefore we pass in the kula that you do not make another bracha. Outcome.
So in the example maybe of coffee rather than most people, I think, only intended l'chatchila to drink
one cup of coffee,
and they never had a cup on. Maybe with wine, they were going to drink more than one.
Yeah, it would seem.
With coffee, they were only intending to have one.
So then it would seem that even according to Rabbeinu Tam, you would make another bracha if you weren't planning to drink anymore. Yeah. If he was making a bracha on one chickpea and it fell, then obviously, then according to all opinions, he would have to make a bracha on the next one. But I'm discussing, right, specifically, you're right, only if you were planning to drink another coffee. If you're so tired that you drop it out of your hand, you probably woke up and said, I need two coffees. Yeah, so. So we have here Machloikas, and importantly, the Beis Yosef then says there's also a Maril, who's a later one of the later Poiskim in Ashkenaz, the Yesoid for Minig Ashkenaz, who says a story like this: you make a goffin on a cup of wine, and then you take a little sip, and you realize it's not wine, it's water. In theory, it could be also it's very diluted, and therefore it has a din of water. Yeah. So he says, drink another cup. And don't make another goffin. Don't make another goffin. Says the Beis Yosef, or says Dr. Moshe, it seems that the Maril is on the side of Rabbeinu Tam and the Gos Maimonius and the Kolboy, and not on the side of the Rosh and the Rambam. And there's a reason I'm pointing that out. Right. Now, coming to Shulchan Aruch, how does the Mechaber paskin? So, as you expect, The Mechaber has a rule, he takes the Rif Rosh and Rambam, and if two of the three agree, that always is the halacha, besides in almost no exceptions, very, very few exceptions. So over here, the Rosh and the Rambam agree that you make another bracha, and that is the Pesach and Shulchan Aruch. You take in the Mechaber, you take something in your hand, you make a bracha, falls down, you'd have to make another bracha, even though you were planning to eat the rest of the food. That is the Pesach and the Mechaber. And the Ramah, as you would expect, argues, because the Ramah will be Mishash of more, will take into account more Ben Atam, and the Maril, who's the Poisit for Ashkenaz, that then becomes the Mini Ashkenaz. The Ramah says, no, if you're planning to eat the rest, like Ben Atam, if you're planning to eat some more Arbus, you're planning to eat, drink another cup of coffee, so then you would not make a second bracha. That's the Pesach of the Ramah. So, Bashkopa Rishayna, it would seem that if this Talmud Chacham by the Shalom Zohar was a Ashkenazi, then what he did was wrong. He had no problem. He made a bracha. It covered the rest of the chickpeas. But if he was a Sephardi, so let's assume that he was a Sephardi and he followed the psokim of the Mechaber, at least the Chatchila, he wanted to be choishesh for the Mechaber, or maybe he was an Ashkenazi, but he wanted to cover all the bases. He was Machmer, a Shaila of a bracha of Atala. He didn't want to, by mistake, have a bracha of Atala. So therefore, he was worried that if he doesn't eat the relevant chickpea, so then it's a bracha of Atala. Right? His original bracha goes away. So he went and ate the whole plate. The question is, this is really where things start. That's a little bit of background explaining what the shayla was. The question is, does eating the whole plate help? And there's a lot of nidoyim, a lot of things we can think through, but I'd like to focus on two points. Does eating the whole plate help? A, seemingly there's a hesek. In other words, if you say his bracha, according to the Mechaber, according to the Rosh and the Rambam, his bracha didn't work until he eats the right chickpea. The relevant chickpea. The chickpea that he was holding in his hand, right? Until he gets to that chickpea, his bracha doesn't take effect. Isn't chal. On the other ones, they don't create your bracha. They don't make the bracha work. So, in between his bracha and his eating, the thing the bracha was on, he's eating a whole load of chickpeas. Is that a hefsek? One question. So the question is, that springboard, is eating a hefsek between a bracha and eating? Yeah?
I've got a bracha on the others then.
Oh, and the second question is, that's right, the second thing I'd like to discuss is that seemingly he's eating 30 chickpeas without a bracha. If you're choishesh, according to Ramah, you're fine. If you're choishesh for the Mechaber, then seemingly he's eating 30 chickpeas without a bracha. Yeah. So it could be he said to himself like this, yeah? He said like this, that to eat what's a greater shayla, making a bracha of a tola or eating without a bracha? What's worse? So it's clear in halacha that bracha atola is worse. Yeah, some hold the raisa, even if not, it's called very chomor. And the proof is, whenever you have a sofik on a bracha, what do we say? That halacha you're allowed to continue eating, even though you might be eating without a bracha, but you don't go make another bracha to be safe and eat with a bracha, which may be a bracha of atola, right? So maybe bracha of atola we stay clear. So for brachas hakel, eating without a bracha, ikar adin is allowed, even though it might be correct to avoid. But eating with a sophic bracha is allowed. So it could be said of this, I'm going to eat the rest. I have the Ramah to rely on who allows me to eat the rest. So it's not so terrible. I have the Ramah to rely on. And anyway, for that I don't need to be so machmir, because that's a shayla of eating without a bracha. But a bracha of atola, perhaps he knows the choymer of the issa of bracha of atola, that I want to cover. So therefore I'll eat, so that could be one way to get around this shayla. But there might be another way. But let me first, so the two shaylas I want to discuss is, one is eating between a bracha, is eating a hefsek. We know when you make a bracha and you speak it's a hefsek, right? Everyone knows that. What about if you eat between a bracha and the food that you made the bracha on? I mean, it could be like another case. Imagine I make a mezonos, and then I take a drink, I make a mezonos, then I want to have a, before I eat the cake, I want to have a sip of coffee. I already made a shakel, let's say. So is that drinking a hefsek? Would I have to make another bracha? And the second shayla was the fact that I've eaten all the other ones without a bracha. Let's say this: is it considered that I've eaten the other ones without a bracha, or do I say that because in the end my bracha is going to take effect, so maybe I have a bracha, so I'm eating the other ones with a bracha, even though so far the bracha hasn't taken effect, but I know I'm going to eat all my chickpeas when I get to the right chickpea. So then the bracha is suddenly going to be a valid bracha. So I've made a bracha. I can now, it's not considered that I ate the first 30 chickpeas without a bracha. So those are the two nidoyim that I'd like to discuss, at least b'kitzer. As far as the first question of hefsek, the Bashkof Roshayin, I mentioned to you that there's a maril over here. The maril is one of those that says you don't make another bracha. The maril said that you drink, you make a hagofen on wine. and you take a sip of the wine, and you find out that it's water. Which, by the way, I had this question before. Both myself, others also asked me, not with water, but sometimes you taste the wine and it's been sitting too long, and it's vinegar. Now, if it's so you have the same shayla. Can I just drink some more wine? Assuming I was planning to drink some more wine. Yeah. If it's undrinkable because it's properly vinegar, so then it wouldn't have a bracha at all. If it's semi-drinkable, but it's definitely not pleasant and it's not wine, then the bracha shakel. So either way, my goffin is no good. So is the drinking a hefsek? So the Maril clearly isn't bothered by the drinking. The Maril clearly isn't bothered. He says, you drank a bit of water. Because you plan to drink another cup of wine, go ahead and drink the next cup of wine. And he doesn't say that the drinking of the water is a hefsek, and therefore you have to make another goffin. So seemingly drinking is not a hefsek. And the Magen Avraham brings this Maril in a different place, it's in Reish Tes, and asks exactly this question, that seemingly drinking the water should be a hefsek. And he says, evidently, speaking is a hefsek, and drinking is not a hefsek.
And
if you have no more wine, then there's nothing to do. Your bracha is a bracha of atola. It was by mistake a bracha, I think. And then you say baruch shem, and you have nothing to do. Even if you have more wine, but you definitely weren't planning to drink it. Yeah. So then, again, you'd have to make another bracha on additional wine.
This would be a coffee as well.
Oh, that's a very good point. Yeah. So but that's only if you make a goffin on coffee, you're not yotzer. If you make a goffin on wine, it covers your coffee.
Yeah, but you make black on wine, you can't drink the wine, so you don't have to make shakel on the coffee.
Yeah, that's only if you drank the wine. Oh. Because it's the drinking of the wine which is the ikkah that makes the coffee a toffel. So that is true, that could be another way to explain the Maril for those that are. It could be it's not a hefsek. It could be what Maril was, because you're drinking another cup of wine, so in a moment your bracha takes effect. And then the water was covered. And maybe that's why it's not a hefsek. But the Magen Avraham says that from this Maril you see that speaking is a hefsek and drinking is not a hefsek. And I want to share with you another ayah. That's what I said related to the parasha. And as always, the clock makes things, confuses me. But in this week's parasha, we obviously learn about the Korban Pesach. And we say al matzah samirim yichlu. The Korban Pesach was eaten together with matzah and maror. And there's machloikus in the Gemara whether that means that the Korban Pesach had to be eaten Pesach, matzah, maror all together as one shawarma, right? Matzah, soft matzahs like some people have wrapped around with some with lettuce and Korban Pesach meat inside. And roasted meat, so that's a opinion of Hillel. And the opinion of the Chum is you could do it either this way or that way. As we know, today, Korban Pesach we don't have anymore. Until there's a Hashem this year we will, but for the moment, last year we didn't have the Korban Pesach. And matzah is the Raisa, a mitzvah the Raisa, because it's an additional posuk for Eretz Yisrael matzahs. And Moro nowadays is only a Zecher, it's only Drabonon. So the Chum says, since matzah is the Raisa, Moro is Drabonon, you can't eat them together. So you have to first have matzah, then Moro. Hillel, on the other hand, holds, true, matzah is the rice, so you have to first have matzah. But after you have matzah, you have to eat moro. But since moro was then eaten together with matzah, today also the way to fulfill the mitzvah of moro is with the matzah. How do we paskin? We don't paskin. Sofik. A sofik, whether you should have the moro alone. First you say matzah, moitzi matzah. Then a sofik, whether to have the moro alone or to have it with your matzah in a sandwich. So that's what we have, moitzi matzah, and then moro, and then kairich. We make a brach on the moro. And then we go and eat the koirich. The bracha, now everyone knows, I think, that Leila Seder, we don't speak. From all the way from Oitzi Matzah, all the way till koirich. Certainly from Moro to koirich, you're not supposed to speak. Why don't you speak between Moro and koirich? Because the bracha you made Alachilas Moro goes on the Moro, according to Chomim, and goes on the koirich, according to Hillel. So you want the bracha to take effect. So you can't speak. And speaking is a hefsek between the bracha and the mitzvah. According to Hillel, you only begin the mitzvah when you take your first bite into your koirich. So you... Okay, you say kein osei Hillel, correct. So first of all, there are those that question that. And we say that would be allowed to speak before bracha, l'tzorech ha-mitzvah. So you have to work out why that's called tzorech ha-mitzvah. Between the bracha. Between a bracha, you're allowed to say, feed the animals. Since you have to feed the animals before you eat, so you're allowed to say between the bracha of eating, feed the animals. Similarly, you're allowed to say, Kenos and Hillel. That's the way we pass it. But speak anything else, we don't do between Moror and Koirich because it's a hefsek. What do you mean you're anyway eating? You're eating the Moror, which is not the mitzvah. According to Hillel, the mitzvah is Koirich, and you're eating the Moror. So you're anyway being mafsek. So evidently, it looks like that eating is not the same as speaking. Between a bracha and a mitzvah, speaking is a hefsek, and eating is not a hesek. So that's a raya from this week's parasha that eating is not. So therefore, the eating of the arbus between the eating of the arbus between his bracha and the effect and the bracha working seemingly isn't a problem. I have to clarify, all we're discussing is when you make a bracha and you haven't eaten yet. If you begin to eat, then we know you can speak in between at every meal. You make Adoma, once the bracha takes effect, so then you can speak, you can eat, you can do whatever you want. I mean, there's dinim of Eskadas, but they're much more lenient. But we're discussing the bracha and before the bracha's taken effect to the beginning of the eating. That's where these shilas. That's where generally you can't speak even one word, and you can't walk, and there's all sorts of halachas. The bracha has to be attached to elechet chila. You can't wait even more than tochidei dibur. So that's between the bracha and the eating. Yeah, well, obviously it's very different if you actually ate, and then it's just a continuation of the eating where we're much more makel. So the hefsek we've decided is ample room to say it's not a problem, even though there is a taz that implies differently. The Taz is discussing a din of Ikra and Tofel. So usually Ikra and Tofel, the two foods are mixed together. You have an Ikra and a Tofel. But sometimes you have an Ikra and a Tofel, and sometimes you start with the Ikra and you continue with the Tofel. There is cases of Ikra and Tofel where you start with the Tofel and then go on to the Ikra. So for example, you want to drink, this is one example, and you're eating Garini Gudgonius, something sweet, in order to sweeten the drinks, eat before. If you want to drink a drink of water, if you have something sweet before, a fruit or sweets before your water, it makes the water also a little sweeter. So, but it's toffel. It's only for your water. Or in the case of Shulchan Aruch, it's only for your wine. So you're starting with the toffel and then having the ikkar. So the din is you make a broth on the toffel and then after, and you can't cover it with the ikkar. So the Taz says, 1 minute, why can't you just not make a broth on the toffel and eat it, it's a toffle, and then make a bracha on the ikka? That's what he asks. And his maskana is, because it is a hefsek. The eating, no, sorry. Why can't you make a, he says you can't do that, because you're going to be eating without a bracha, the toffle, and you can't have a gnaw for a moment, on oinam haz without a bracha, so you can't do that. Then he says, why don't you make you're drinking wine, eating something and drinking wine, why don't you make a goffin, and then eat the toffle, then the ikka? So he says, no, the tofel, the eating of the tofel will be a hefsek between our gofen and the eating. So it looks like the Taz learns that it is a hefsek. Eating is a hefsek.
That's even a bigger chiddush because the eating
is tofel. That's right. So the Taz is a little bit more myrich. I don't have time to go through it. And he goes through that to some extent. And then we could say that the Taz agrees in our case. And that our case, because he says it's a different kind of a no. Here is all the Arbus. But the bottom line is, according to Taz, we have another Svara. I can't tie it all up, but I'm just going to... According to Taz, we have another Svara. According to Taz, it comes out of Chura that the bracha you made does work for all the things you ate as well. Because the Taz says that... why can't you just eat the toffle and then make a bracha on the ikka and eat it? That was this. She says, no, because you'll be eating the toffle before you made a bracha. In our case, you've made the bracha already. You've thanked Hashem already. It's just that the bracha won't work if you don't have certain conditions, if it's not chal on the arbus, on the chickpea that you had. So it could be in our case, it's not considered like you've eaten the first 30 chickpeas without a bracha. Rather, it's considered like you've made a bracha, it hasn't yet taken effect, but after it takes effect, it'll then work also for the other chickpeas. So, okay, I have here a very strong warning that 9 o'clock is 9 o'clock, so I wish you all a very good Shabbos, and for the return of the parasha, you'll have to open this for yourself.
So for a thought for this week's sedra, since much was spoken about on the subject of arbus, so we'll speak about the makkah of arbus. And Arbe was one of the makkas, getting arbus, no?
Yeah.
So I heard a thought from the Lev Simcha. By the way, today is Svasimis Yutzah, just as a matter of passing, so we can't pass by without one Gerevot. And he said that Rashi goes to great lengths to describe the distinction between the Arbe, which was there in the time of Yoel, and also the Arbe, which was there in Mitzrayim. And he describes the four different species, Yelek, Guzom, Chusel, Ahag, Samasa. And there was a problem because both say that there was never ever before or ever to precede it, and in the future of mankind will ever be a makkah of similar seriousness, profundity,
magnitude.
So magnitude is the right one, yes, and therefore we have to be able to differentiate what actually was so special about Mitzrayim that they only had the one species. So, if you've been to a building site, and here in London, it's very unlikely that you'll hear English spoken. But even if you hear foreign languages spoken, you know that if four Poles get to do a bricklaying job, they're likely to get the job done well and quickly, because they are speaking the same language. You know, I'll bring you a raya to this from Dora Fluge. They did the marvelous job of building that tower until they're not speaking the same language. Then the whole thing fell to pieces. And if you take one Pakistani, one Pole, one Czech Slovak, and one Romanian, you're in big trouble, man, because within a couple of minutes, one will be saying to the other one, "We don't do it like this in our country. I'll show you how to do it." And then, catch. So therefore, four of them doing exactly the same job, if they're the same species of locusts, they get the job done well. And when they do it all together, and they're speaking the same language, and they know what the undertaking is, then Mitzrayim ain't a fighting chance, and therefore the food that was on the ground there was absolutely, decimated and consumed completely. There's another he'ura on Arbe, which says Vayunach ho Arbe, Vatunach ho Arbe, Vayunach. So the Palatirim picks up this Vayunach like it says Vayunach boYom Hashvi, that on Shabbos there's also the same lushna of Vayunach. So we learn now from there that on Shabbos the Arbe stayed in one place. It says one place means there's a couple of observations you can make about that. Because if a locust jumps from the orange groves to the pears, to the apples, and then afterwards back to the wheat, he's take a nibble at each one of them, but he doesn't do the job thoroughly. But if he stays for 26 hours in one place and he eats the wheat right down to the very root, then you should know that there's never anything that's going to grow from there again. And so therefore, Vayunach, this particular Arbe, was unique, according to the Balatirim who picks it up, that on Shabbos they did the job properly, and therefore it tells you another distinction about why the Arbe in Mitzrayim was so severe and was never replicated again. And the third one, which is also B'Shem, they say that Shem Lev Simcha, but it was never printed for political purposes, obviously wasn't correct, was that the fact that if you have Arbe that are resting on Shabbos, that means that those Arbe are Frimme. Frimme, the Rabshitzer says, a Frum is Rushitaivus viel Risches, Weinig Mitzvahs. And so if you've got a Frumme Arbe, he said, this is the worst MacGyver that can hit mankind. Once people are into the realm of being frimme, they must, you know, they're busy telling you was verherrsches aus Essen and what you should be doing and when you should be lying Kirschme. That's the worst plague that can ever hit you. So that's the three he'uras on Makas Arbe with regards to the difference between Yoels and the others. But there is also something which Rabbi Danny Kirsch mentioned a couple of years ago here, and he spoke about it, he mentioned it in a couple of seconds, he only alluded to it, but when he said it, I thought about it, and it's a very, very deep vault, and it has to do with this week's Seder, because Kachatzois, Bachatzois, the famous difference that Paroi said, He said, Moshe Rabbeinu, when relating it to Paro, he told him approximately kachatzoy salaylo, and Moshe Rabbeinu heard it from the Rabbeinu Shlolem very precisely, bachatzoy salaylo. So, why did he change it? So Rashi points out shelo yoimri itzdagine Paro, that they, since they didn't have Rolexes with Swiss timekeeping, therefore automatically they would get it wrong and they would say, ah, Moshe Badui, and that it, now it. Before we get to the other hurrah from Rabbi Kirsch, it's just worth thinking about. A guy who told you that the blood of the Nile is going to, the water of the Nile is going to turn to blood, and it happened, and that the place is going to be swarming with frogs and the floor with lice, yeah, pretty strong track record. And when he said that the place is going to be swarming with wild animals and they're going to tear you limb from limb and it happened, you would have thought that by the time that he comes around to telling you that about a third of the entire population of this godforsaken country is going to die at midnight, that you might take heed of it. But if you're busy looking at your watch and saying, if I was 3 minutes before midnight, you said it's going to happen midnight. Hallo Duvahi, you have to be out of your mind, man. Is that what you're concerned about? You can ask the same thing by Soita. You know, by Isha Soita, the Gemara says also that the Gemara says that the Torah says that the water goes, that the Nofli Yereicha, Vetzufsu Bitna, and the question of the Gemara was, what actually explodes first, the stomach or her legs? So the Pusik says it's in two versions. One, the legs first and then the stomach, and then afterwards another place, the stomach first and the legs first. So what is it, one or the other? So the Gemara explains that one way has got to do with the way of gravity, the way the water reaches her, the other one has got to Derech Hanu'usa. But not going into that, if you saw something like this at the base of Mikdash, and you walked in, you saw a lady taking a small L'chaim Becher with a small bit of water, and suddenly she blows to smithereens, you would not be in the business of questioning exactly which part of her body distended and went to pieces first. You'd probably be traumatized and shocked out of your mind, and remember this spectacle, that's the reason why you went to see it in the first place, is that it causes you to think about adultery before you commit it. So now the answer to both is the same thing. When you have a koyach of letzunas, then a person looks at things in a way where he can undo the seriousness and the momentum. So you can have a person speaking on a Shabbos Shiva Drusha, and he brings everybody together, and he really brings the seriousness to the moment, and people are taken, and some people even have tears in their eyes. And just on the way out, you have a guy who says, yeah, you know, somebody should tell him that before you speak in public, you should polish your shoes properly, you know. Another one says, did you see the tie that he was wearing? Only needs one remark like this, and the whole drusha falls to pieces. Because one tiny bit of letzunas has got that koyach. This is what happened by the Isha Soita, and this is the same thing that happened by Kachatzos HaLailo. You can have 9 makas preceding, and every single one comes to reality. And Moshe Rabbeinu has got an unblemished track record, unparalleled, and everything that he said was true to the iota. And nevertheless, there'll be people who are walking at their watches. Yep, I was 3 minutes before midnight. Kachatzos, bachatzos. But that's not what Rabbi Kirsch said. What he said was that today's watches are different to the ones that they used to be. Today, they have digital watches. You shake them and then all of a sudden it says 11:58. Or you come up later, it's 12:02. Once upon a time, we used to have the analog watches, you know, with numbers. There's 1, 2, 3. You know the differences before? Because 12 has got a number before it. It's called 11. And it's also got a number after it, called 1. And 1 is followed by 2. You know why? Because in time, once upon a time, there was a lot to do with what was going on in a broader spectrum. So therefore, what was happening now had some sort of reflection about what happened before and what's going to happen afterwards. And therefore, 12 is preceded by 11, and 12 is afterwards got a 1. Because it's not just the moment. We look at time as a broader perspective.
what led up to it, what happens after it, because it's all in the bigger, broader picture. And the digital watches, you press them and it tells you, now it's 12 o'clock. Now it's 12:01. Because nothing else matters. Only thing that matters is what's going on for me right now. I need immediate gratification. I need to know what's happening at present. What happens in the future, what happened in the past, is of little relevance because I live for the moment, not for what was and for not what will be. It's my mile that is sort of about time. Kachatzois, bachatzois is very, very relevant, especially today, and it's reflected actually in the timepieces that we wear. Good job.
Whatever you like. It's up to you. It's getting. You have to go to the bank. Don't you?